Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, Episode 19, The Staff of Dreams. I am one of your co-hosts, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is the lovely and talented Christopher Slate.
Hello.
And we are back to talk about Nintendo. Our big topic today is going to be the 30th anniversary of the Nintendo Entertainment System. We can be guilty of, you know, celebrating a lot of anniversaries for, you know, any old reason, but this is a pretty huge anniversary, so we're going to get into it in a little bit, but first we're going to kick it off with the news. And the first news topic I'd like to talk about is a game that we enjoy tremendously, Super Smash Brothers. There was some new DLC that came out last week, right after we recorded our podcast. Have you been enjoying that? Have you been playing it? What do you think?
Yeah, a little bit. I've been so absorbed with Mario Maker that I basically just ducked into the Smash Brothers DLC long enough to try out the Mario Maker stage, just very briefly. I haven't tried on the new costumes yet, although I'm pretty sure I know what to expect there.
Yeah.
And I haven't tried the level that they put on the 3DS, the free level as part of the Duck Hunt stage, as part of the mandatory update.
I mean, that's pretty much the same as the one that's on Wii U
already,
right?
I mean, I do want to experience that on the 3DS, just haven't gotten around to it yet. But yeah, my impressions of the Mario Maker level is that it's really cool. I haven't played it nearly enough to get a full sense of just how different it changes up every time. But, you know, I did play it in the few times I tried it out. It was neat how, you know, it'll even go through the different styles from Mario Maker.
I mean, I had a really good time with it. I was kind of surprised, you know, from the trailer I thought it was going to be changing a lot. Like, you know, it would just completely radically change while you're in the middle of a stage. But no, it's only really minor things that change, you know, during gameplay. I mean, each time you play it, it seems very, very different. But I thought there was going to be like, you know, suddenly, you know, you're, you know, in a castle stage, and then you're in a, you know, precarious, you know, cliff stage, and then you're in a plane stage. But it's not like that. It's just little minor changes. But it's a blast. I was playing a lot of, you know, 8-player Smash, mostly against the CPU. Had a lot of fun. It makes me think that there really should be sloped surfaces in Mario Maker.
Yeah.
And it was crazy the way they combined some things, you know, like your traditional ground stage with the, Bowser Castle stage. You know, there were some parts, I like to play with the gravity, you know, really low. So, you know, there was this part where I would just, you know, be able to knock people back into some of the lava. And every time they hit the lava, they would just go launching out there. That was the end of them. So, yeah, it's a really cool stage. I really like it. Wind Waker stage is fun as well, the pirate ship. But, you know, we've come to, you know, we already know what that is. It's a stage from a previous game, but it's nice to see it back.
Nice and pretty in HD, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a cool Omega form if you just want to go on one of the platforms above the water.
I actually haven't tried that out yet.
Yeah.
Good to know. The DLC for the costumes, I'm not, you know, super stoked about. It's cool to see Toad. I was surprised to see Monster Hunter stuff, although I probably shouldn't have been. Those are some, you know, okay additions. If you're a Monster Hunter fan, it's really nice to see. But I'm kind of fed up with the costumes. I feel like enough of that. Let's get some more characters and stuff.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not a Monster Hunter fan, so I, you know, nothing against Monster Hunter fans. I'm glad they got this bit of DLC if it makes them happy. But you know, if you're not going to have a cool new character, then you know, more of how impressed or not you are of this kind of wave of DLC, you know, is shouldered by the costumes. So, you know, this one was probably the weakest lineup for me, even though I really do like the Mario Maker level. But then again, if you'd put in a character that maybe is a bit obscure as a costume that I would have appreciated, but maybe some other folks wouldn't have liked, then I personally would have been a lot warmer toward it.
Yeah, if they put in the Kinkorn Karn costume, we'd be very excited, but probably nobody else would.
Yeah.
But, you know, the rumor is that, you know, people have hacked into the code a little bit, and there are going to be, like, you know, two more stages and three more characters coming soon. No idea what those will be. Of course, you know, the voting closed just a couple of days ago, so if there's any justice in the world, we'll be getting the Amazon in the game pretty soon.
Right, right. Yeah, the Smash ballot voting finally closed. No word from Nintendo. I was hoping they would at least acknowledge the closing of it and maybe give us a time frame or some general ballpark idea of when we can expect some to hear the first results or actions that they're going to take based on the voting. But so far, nothing yet.
Well, they've been very, very quiet over the last few months. Seems like they still haven't quite got there. House in order, and it seems hard for them to make announcements, but we know they're working on stuff behind the scenes, so looking forward to that. And speaking of exciting DLC, we found out there is more DLC coming to Super Mario Maker.
Yeah, the host, actually, you're much more familiar with the show than I am, Game Center CX?
Game Center CX, yes. It's a Japanese program where a middle-aged gamer who claims to suck at games, you know, challenges trying to beat games, you know, every week, takes on a new challenge to conquer some you know, difficult or maybe not so difficult title.
They're usually like retro games, right?
Yes, yes. It's almost always a retro thing. You know, I was just watching an episode where he was you know, trying to conquer Battletoads over the past weekend. That was entertaining. You know, he's tried to, you know, beat all the Mega Man games. I guess not all of them, but yeah, it's fun to watch. He's a cool guy. He is you know, known as Mr. Areno, and yeah, he's going to be a sprite in the game, a costume.
Yeah, and Mr. Miyamoto has appeared on his show, or maybe, I don't know if it's that specific show or at just events with him.
Yeah, I think it was a special Game Center CX event where I think, did Miyamoto create levels for him, or did he create levels for Miyamoto?
I believe he created levels for Miyamoto to play.
Yeah, Miyamoto said they sucked. Yeah, because, you know, they're the kind of, you know, difficult trolley levels that a lot of people actually are making in the game. But it was still, you know, fun to watch, regardless.
Yeah, and so that partnership had went even deeper than we would have suspected, mm-hmm. with him appearing. So that makes two, if you include Neki the Fox, the mascot mm-hmm. for the Japanese video game magazine Famitsu.
Yeah,
that
two
includes
very Japanese character sprites.
Exactly. Now, again, we have to ask the question: are they going to come to the U.S.? And if not, how weird is that? If we can play Japanese
weird.
Levels that have those elements in them, but we can't create them ourselves.
And maybe there will be special sprites, you know, based on you know, U.S. You know, gaming outlets as well.
Maybe they'll release them all at once, and in both the West and the East will get kind of their own specific sets. I mean,
they'll dig up Nestor. We'll get a Nestor sprite. That could be actually amazing.
That would be awesome.
I would love that. But yeah, that was some cool news. Yeah, of course, if you're not familiar with Game Center CX, you might be familiar with its your U.S. counterpart. There actually was a game based on it that came out over here known as Retro Game Challenge. Xseed published it on the original DS. It's actually a cool game if you ever want to look it up. We also have some Hyrule Warriors Legends news. That is, of course, the port of Hyrule Warriors that was on Wii U coming to 3DS next year. Got a new playable character announced.
Skull Kid. That's going to make a lot of Majora's Mask fans happy, including me.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty neat. We knew about the Wind Waker characters, but now Skull Kid as well.
Yeah, and Phantom Ganon from Ocarina of Time is also in there as a boss.
Oh, wow. Definitely the Ocarina of Time version, huh? I was kind of thinking it might be the Wind Waker version when I heard the name.
Well, you know, maybe. I guess it wasn't specific. Yeah, but they seem to be pulling not just, I mean, Wind Waker kind of got the initial, you know, spotlight put on it for this version, mm-hmm. but obviously
yeah,
Skull Kid
like
from
big new inclusion.
Majora's Mask. Mm-hmm. So now they seem to be pulling from all over the place again. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. Presumably that means that that kind of will be coming to Wii U as well, since, you know, everything else is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the game on Wii U, so looking forward to it. And speaking of upcoming releases, there was some news about Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival also.
Yeah, they finally dated it. It's November the 13th here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So maybe a little bit surprisingly, it's going to be a full $60. But then that makes sense when you factor in the fact that it's going to come bundled with Isabelle and Digby Amiibo figures and three Amiibo cards.
And they're exclusive Amiibo cards, right? You can't get these Amiibo cards any other way.
Yeah, I guess so, because they specify that they feature Stitches, Goldie, and Rosie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I pre-ordered the game a while back. It was $59.99. I was hoping that that price would go down, but knowing that comes the Amiibo, I'm like, okay, all right, whatever. I got to get my Amiibo fixed one way or the other.
Yeah.
So I'm doing it. And you know, then a bunch of the Amiibo are coming out at the same time, right?
Yeah, there's a three-pack of KK, Reese, and Cyrus that were released on the same day. The three-pack cost about $35. And also, I think they're going to have individual Amiibo figures the same day for Tom Nook and Mabel.
Mm-hmm.
And then like a week later, on November 22nd, they're going to have one more Animal Crossing Amiibo figure for Lottie.
Okay, so those are the original eight that we've seen for quite some time. They were announced a while back. I saw them all at E3. But then they went ahead, at least Japan, announced that there are four more Animal Crossing Amiibo coming out in December over there. And that is Blathers, Celeste, Mr. Rossetti, finally, and Kix. So, yeah, they're not stopping with the Animal Crossing Amiibo train. And, you know, I'm sort of, you know, toot toot all aboard.
Well, actually, I'm sweating a little bit. I mean, I love the characters in Animal Crossing, and they make for great Amiibo. But, man, they got 400 of these cards coming out. And I'm not going to be buying Smash Brothers levels of Animal Crossing Amiibo. So,
well, yeah.
They've got a – it's fine so far, but they better, you know, cut it off pretty soon.
Yeah, I hope they don't go nuts with it. I mean, with these 12, they're all adorable, and I love them, and I want to get them for sure. But
yeah, and the last thing you want – this is like a slippery slope down to, you know, over 700 Pokemon Amiibo.
I'm not getting the cards. Hey, speaking of Amiibo, let's talk more about our favorite topic.
Amiibo!
So the word on the street is that the Mii Fighter 3-pack that we've known about being a 3-pack for quite some time is going to be a Toys R Us exclusive.
Yeah, and in fact, I just saw a picture online where apparently if you live in a certain Oklahoma neighborhood, you can buy those off the shelf right now.
Oh, wow.
They mistakenly put them out early, and there was a nice photo of dozens of 3-packs just hanging on the wall next to some Sonics.
Well, that is very nice.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the rest of us
that live there
will have to wait, though. But the report that I saw, and I don't know how substantiated this is, but I'll just throw it out there, claimed that a healthy supply of, on average, about 100 sets per store were gonna be available on day one. Mm-hmm. So if that's even close to being true, then it seems like Nintendo's finally catching up to the production, because we certainly saw that with some of the most recent Amiibo. Maybe not.
Yeah, Dr. Mario was still easy to get. He's still all over the place at Target.
The exclusives have been really easy. Ironically, some of the more common ones,
yes.
Not so much. But I used to hate exclusive Amiibo. Now I'm kind of for
it. They're actually the easiest ones to get.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. I mean, either way, I don't think that this 3-pack is going to be too hard to find. They've been one of the easiest ones to import. The import prices are really low. I actually did order an import set myself that's supposed to arrive later this week. That seems like it was kind of unnecessary. I could have just gone to Oklahoma, bought it there. I'm sort of going to add these to my collection.
We're getting close to the end of the Smash line.
Yeah, I mean, after that, it's just going to be, I think, it's just going to be Falco and the DLC characters.
Yeah.
And, if you've missed any of the other Amiibo, great news. They've actually been restocking some of these at, like Best Buys and Toys R Us. And the ones that used to be retailer exclusive are no longer retailer exclusive. I mean, I've heard stories of people going in to, Toys R Us and finding, like, tons and tons of Shulks.
Yeah. You know what? I bet we see a bit more of that, too, now that, like I just said, the Smash line is winding down. That'll probably free up their production resources to, go back and revisit more of these original, figures, since there's not as many new ones coming out.
But yeah, aside from, just the exclusives, some of the really rare ones, like Little Mac and Marth are showing up again. Still no word on the two that are, for me, the hardest to get, which were Robin and Lucina. But still, a lot of the really rare ones are back in circulation again. I mean, we went to Best Buy yesterday to take a look, and it was, there was nothing there. Ours was still crappy, but hopefully, for a lot of people, they're able to find these. And certainly, I've heard lots of reports online that is indeed the case.
Bad news for the new tennis game, though. Why Ultra Smash?
Yeah, it doesn't look like there's going to be any Amiibo functionality in that game, strangely enough.
Yeah, there was some new box art released to replace kind of the original temporary box art, I believe, that was shown at E3.
Mm-hmm.
And, I guess I don't know if we're 100% sure that the new box art is the final definitive, art. But at least judging by this new piece, it doesn't have the Amiibo support logo on it.
Mm-hmm.
So no Amiibo love there for a game that's filled with Mario characters. Kind of an odd choice, especially since the game could easily have, unlockable special rackets or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they've already got those Mario Party Amiibo out there. It seems like it would be an obvious thing to just make those compatible with it or something like that.
But Mario and Luigi Paper Jam.
Yes, on the other hand, that game is coming out early December in Japan, and it will actually support a lot of the Mario Amiibo that are out there.
Yeah, and specifically that's Mario, Luigi, Peach, Yoshi, Toad, Bowser, Dr. Mario, 8-Bit Mario, and Yarn Yoshi.
Well, pretty nice. Do we know what they do yet?
No idea.
All right. Well, I will look forward to that nonetheless. We got a couple bits of interesting third-party Nintendo-related news. One is that, you know, a couple episodes back, I was talking about how I was excited about 3D Sonic the Hedgehog 2 coming out at the end of September, because that was when they originally said it was coming. It didn't come out then. We're in October already. But it is coming out this week, so they say. So, you know, by the time you hear this or shortly afterwards, it'll probably be available for download. That should be a lot of fun. And, you know, even more excitingly for JRPG fans, Atlus has announced a Shin Megami Tensei 4 final game for 3DS. And I don't think they've been, you know, super forthcoming with the details, but it doesn't appear to just be an upgraded version. It seems like it's actually a sequel, you know, kind of like Square tends to do, you know, with Final Fantasy X-2 or 13-2 or something like that, where it's going to be a brand new follow-up in that series. I didn't play that one very much, just like the first, you know, dungeon or two. It's a very challenging game, but, you know, a lot of people swear by it, and it's really cool to see that series continuing on, especially on 3DS.
Hopefully it'll get a new audience kind of ready and excited for the Fire Emblem crossover.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good reason to consider as well. So we actually got a few fan letters recently, and I'd like to address them on this episode.
That's right. We do read all of the emails, even if we don't respond to them straight away.
Yeah, it takes us a while sometimes. So Joe Trump wrote in, and he asked about how, you know, at the end of the movie, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure 2, Bill and Ted play against the character Death in a series of games for their survival. If you were in that situation, what game would you play against Death to save your life?
Wow. What game would I pick to save my life? I suppose I want to pick the game that I'm the best at.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, you know what? I'd probably say I got two answers.
Okay.
My first answer, my slightly more serious answer, is Super Mario 3D World, because my little boy has forced me to play and replay those levels so many times that I've pretty much maxed out that
game.
Well,
that's
game
only like a single, well, two I mean, or three it's not a single player game, but it's a cooperative game. How do you play that against Death? I think it has to be a versus competitive game.
Oh, a versus competitive game.
I would assume. I mean, I guess you could say it's time trials or something. But.
Or we could just be co-op but treat it as a I just keep knocking him
in
pits.
That's a good plan. You'll be like, no, Death, we'll just play co-op, and then he won't kill you anymore.
And my other answer was Nintendo Land, because I've probably logged more hours of that game than anybody else has even, you know, dared attempt.
See, I thought you were going to say Mario Kart 8, because, you know, that's a versus competitive game, and you love it.
Yeah, I do. I'm pretty awesome at Mario Kart 8. Yeah, maybe I would try that one too.
Now, personally, I'm not a very you know, competitive gamer when it comes to multiplayer stuff, so I had a hard time, but I think I would probably go back, pull out the N64, and play some WWF No Mercy and lay the smackdown on Death that way. Joe's second question is, you know, if you were like ranked number one in some game, you know, number one in the world, what game would you want it to be?
Ooh, not just what we are good at, but what we wish we were good at?
Yeah.
You know, I might say Smash Brothers, because as much as I enjoy those games, I'm never going to be anything close to top tier, or even the tier under that, or the tier under that. I mean, I do good enough to get by basically unlocking stuff in single player, but yeah, I don't think I'd ever have, I've never had great fighting game chops.
For me, I think I might just say, you know, Mario Maker. You know, it'd be cool to see my name there, number one. I have the most popular, best, most lauded level. That would be kind of nice. Because, again, you know, I'm not big on the multiplayer, so I just might strive to have the number one level in Mario Maker.
Well, I can grant your wish. Just make your level play itself.
I'm not going to go there. But it's true. It's true. It's true. You know, another thing he mentioned in his letter was, you know, what do we think if Nintendo on their next system decided to make their front end be more like a game, kind of like a Mario World map? And I kind of think that's a cool idea. You know, the way that the Wii U works, where, you know, it's got those eight, you know, like icons, and you can't really do anything there. You know, meanwhile, you're doing something on your screen. It's like, it seems like it could be fleshed out more, so I kind of like that idea. It's kind of a neat concept. And
I'm all for Nintendo doing very Nintendo-y kind of off-the-wall creative things, so long, obviously, as it doesn't you know, doing things in a non-traditional way doesn't, you know, slow things down or make it, you know, not as user friendly when the novelty's worn off and you just want to get done whatever you want to get done.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Then we got an email from Kyle Cavino, and he says, I've had a craving to play a side-scrolling beat-em-up brawler on my 3DS, but I've been having trouble finding many. Any suggestions? Well, he has come to the right place.
Were you just writing in an email under an alias so you could talk about this?
Well, it's something we've talked about before. It's actually a very easy answer, and that is 3D Streets of Rage 1 and Streets of Rage 2 are each available in the eShop for like $6 a pop. They're two of the best side-scrolling beat-em-ups, and they're even better with 3D and new features. So, yeah, those would definitely be the ones to get.
But what if you hate retro gaming, Hoff? What if you're one of those new generation kids who just can't stand the old grandpa pixels?
Well, you're going to be probably stuck with pixels no matter what if you want a 2D beat-em-up. But if you want something that's not a downloadable product like that, I would probably say Code of Princess. Which, you know, isn't quite a beat-em-up. It's more of a little, you know, hack and slashy, but it fits the bill. And, you know, it's a pretty neat, you know, side-scrolling game with, you know, some RPG elements, a little bit like Guardian Heroes. So maybe that one. It's not perfect, but it's a very solid action game. And I would go for that one. But, you know, Streets of Rage first.
Well, you'd know.
And then one more. Evan McCall wrote and said, take back what you said about Super Paper Mario, you heathens.
I don't even remember. What did we say about it?
We were saying, it came up in the context of the reviews. We were saying, you know, what if you rated Mario games only on their own separate scale? We would have given that one. And we just pulled a random example out of our butts. We weren't considering, you know, this much when we said that. We said we'd get like, you know, a 6 on the Mario scale, you know, if, you know, something like, you know, Mario Land, Super Mario Land, the original, were like the bottom of the scale, and like the Galaxy games were the top of the scale. Then, you know, that's like, you know, 1 and 10. And then where does something like Super Paper Mario fall? We said we get a 6. And he really likes Super Paper Mario. But that's the point, is that it was a ridiculous scale. It doesn't make any sense. You can't really rate games that way because, you know, when you look into, you know, all these games compared to everything else that's out there, you know, it's all top tier stuff. You know, the Mario games are all very good.
Yeah, absolutely.
The point was just, you know, we like other Mario games, you know, better than that one.
Yeah. That is my least favorite Paper Mario game. But I do still really like it.
You're just going to get mad at it.
Oh, again. We need more letters.
Okay, well, that takes care of that for now. So we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we will talk about the NES anniversary. All right, we are back, and we are here to talk about a excellent anniversary, the 30th anniversary of the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Right, Nintendo only wants to talk about the 30th anniversary for Super Mario Brothers this year, which is a fine anniversary and should be celebrated, but we will not let the anniversary of the NES pass unnoticed.
Yeah, it is officially October 18th. This is, of course, for, you know, the United States. You know,
came out in 85, is it in a test market for the first holiday season.
And that's the same day that, you know, games like Super Mario Brothers came out over here in North America as well. But, you know, the system, the Famicom came out 2 years earlier in Japan, so I guess that's why Nintendo's probably not playing it up. But, you know, for us over here, it's a huge deal. You know, 30th anniversary, it's a pretty big landmark. The NES came, you know, sort of out of nowhere after the video game bubble had popped and the fad was over, and, you know, showed us, nope, no, it's not. There's a lot more in gaming than what you thought, and it can do so much more than what people expected after, you know, the Atari and, you know, that earlier era.
Yeah, I remember playing the NES for the first time and being, wait a minute, you mean a game doesn't have to be, a home console game can be more than just a single screen where you just try mm-hmm. to last as long as you can and get a high score?
Yeah, there's actually an ending.
Yeah, there are levels. I can walk to the right and the screen moves with me.
There's more than one button?
Yeah, you know, some of that stuff you'd seen, there was the occasional oddball, you know, even Atari 2600 game like Raiders of the Lost Ark or Adventure or Pitfall, mm-hmm. Which had a little bit more to it. But by and large, you know, that first wave of NES games, there was some of that stuff. I mean, obviously looked better than Atari, but you had your Clue Lands and you had your, you know, your Donkey Kong, which was still pretty advanced, but it was still just an arcade game port. But yeah, when you started seeing the likes of Super Mario Brothers and some of those early games that really started to take gaming to the next level, mm-hmm. It was a world of difference. And anybody, you know, parents and I think a lot of the pop culture just seem to think, you know, well, gaming was a fad. It's done now. People got tired of Atari or whatever. But, you know, and Nintendo even had to, you know, famously stock the shelves in those first test market mm-hmm. stores themselves. The executives had to go in and actually put up the displays because the retailers had no confidence that games could ever be successful again.
Well, and that's why Rob, the robotic operating buddy, was a big part of the package, because they were being like, no, this isn't really like those old Atari video games. This has a robot pal.
Right.
And we're using that as like a big marketing push. And of course, that, you know, faded away after just a couple of games after we found who needs that gimmick when you have awesome games.
I remember seeing the commercial and thinking that Rob was literally a robot who would play all your games with you when you didn't have friends that could come over.
Yeah, when you find out all what he can do, and just like, you know, very slowly, you know, move his arms to the side and up and down and, you know, gyromite and stack up.
Within 5 minutes of playing with Rob, you've just taken the controller from him and you're pressing the buttons yourself to make those pipes go up and down and gyromite.
Yeah. Of course, when I did that, you know, I'd play it with my friend and I would just, you know, squash him on purpose. That was kind of mean now that I think about it.
Actually, I didn't have Rob long before I accidentally had him like too low and he was holding the spinning disc, and then I had him turn left and his disc cut into his own base and like scarred him and kind of messed him up.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories of broken Robs for one reason or another. But you know, I think the thing that really is important about the NES is the games. So, you know, you and me, we got together. We argued, we butted heads, but we finally came together with our list of the top 30 NES games. So, you know, let's go through this list. Let's count it down and celebrate this 30th anniversary with these 30 games.
All right, this is the official Power Pros list, just like we would all come together as a team on Nintendo Power and come up with a combined list for that magazine as well. So, you know, we may bicker about a couple of the final placement of some of our favorite titles, but I think we're pretty good that this list represents Power Pro as well as a truly outstanding collection of NES games. Like, if you were going to start today even and celebrate the anniversary in your own way by collecting the 30 best games, this is where you start.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And number 30 on the list is Battletoads. This was, you know, a really cool game back in the day. You know, obviously it was inspired somewhat by Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but you know,
somewhat, yeah.
But it was an original property, nonetheless. You know, it wasn't a sequel. It wasn't you know, based on a cartoon directly,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it brought its own unique play mechanics and really cool animation. You know, it was, you know, ostensibly a beat 'em up. But then, you know, lots of side-scrolling platforming stuff. And, of course, you know, super, super insanely challenging.
With three humanoid frogs, right?
I guess there's only two of them because, you know, it's a two-player game. And I don't think you could even select your character other than who's player one and who's player two. Is the third one captured or something? I don't quite remember.
That might be. I thought there was three.
There are three. There's definitely three Battletoads. Okay. But I don't think they were all playable. Yeah, there's a Pimple, Rash, and Zits.
Pretty disgusting.
Yeah, those are definitely what you want your character to be. Like, yeah, I'm playing as Zits. But the names aside, you know, it really pushed the NES hardware back in 91. And, you know, there's, you know, it was very impressive visually and lots of, you know, cool stuff, you know, hidden warp zones and things like that. And then, of course, there's the vehicle stages, which seems like most people never got past the first vehicle stage. You're riding a hover car and trying to dodge these blocks that come after you and hit these ramps. And so the level just went on forever and ever. And then later on, there's other vehicle stages where you're in flying vehicles or like this weird unicycle thing or a water vehicle. And so difficult.
Yeah, a lot of trial and error, and it can be very frustrating. But kind of despite how rough it was and how demanding it was, the parts of it that worked, I suppose, worked well, and it definitely a lot of people remember that. It made quite an impact.
Mm-hmm. Yep, quite an impressive game.
Even if it's just like post-traumatic stress disorder from dodging walls on your hovercraft.
Yeah, apparently on the new version that was recently released on Xbox One, there is a rewind feature. So when you crash into one of those instant death walls, you can just rewind it and try again.
That's nice.
So I've heard. Number 29, Double Dragon.
I still remember playing this game at the arcade. Actually, where my mom worked, they had a version there, and she would just let me play it free all day, basically. And then when it finally came home, people couldn't believe. Like, I mean, well, it's obviously arcade games were ported to the home consoles, but still it was like, not until Street Fighter II was there a game where it seemed like my friends and I were more amped to get the home version of something. Mm. And I remember finding that they didn't have it at the Toys R Us closest to me, but across town there was another Toys R Us and they had just gotten some in. So I got, somebody to drive me over there and I was rushing on my way into the store. I saw somebody walking out of the store holding a copy and all I could think was, please let that not have been the last copy. Mm. And it wasn't. I got in there and I got it. And I really enjoyed it. But looking back on it, there was something missing from that game, wasn't there?
That's true. There was no two-player cooperative mode.
The double from the Double Dragon was missing.
Mm-hmm. That was a bit of an oversight. They corrected it in the sequel. They had Double Dragon 2 come out later. And that did have two-player mode, but the original didn't. But, instead, back then, things couldn't really be arcade perfect, so they would try to evolve the game in some way. And they actually add like some RPG elements, so you leveled up and learned new attacks and things. It was also a fairly tough game. I don't think there were any continues, so you had like 3 lives to get through all 4 levels, defeat the shadow boss. Your brother was actually the final boss in that game.
Yeah, when you get to the game, it's like you have to kill your brother to see who basically gets to be have the girlfriend.
Well, that's what happened in the arcade game. If you were in two-player mode, you'd be like, let's have one player versus two player, and you had to kill each other to see who
wasn't your girl like hanging from a rope or something?
Yeah,
just
she's
a
like
total
up against the
token
wall.
Prize, like the least feminist game of all time.
But in the NES version, your brother is always the final boss.
He's just a jerk. Actually, the game opens with your girlfriend just getting flat out punched in the stomach.
Yeah,
pretty harsh.
Yeah, it just doubles over, and I think someone carries her off over his shoulder.
The thing, going back to the arcade version of that game, the thing that really hooked me was this idea that you could put someone in a hold, and then you could, like, ram your knee into their head.
Yeah.
Which was such an unusual move for a side-scrolling beat-em-up. Usually you just had punches and kicks, and this one had more, like, it's not really strategy, but there was a little bit of just, like, you could just get creative. You could throw them, you could grab the head, mm-hmm. you could do, and so I loved that kind of, that little dance you would do with the enemy, that kind of like, which move are you going to use? What's your strategy going to be? And it was the first game.
Knock him down, mount him, punch him in the face.
Yeah.
Pretty brutal when you think about it.
I even enjoyed Renegade, which was kind of a, I don't know if it was a knockoff, but very much along the same vein mm-hmm. for the NES as well. And like you said, Double Dragon 2 was probably better, but Double Dragon 1 for me was the one that kind of, that I went the craziest over back in the day.
And Double Dragon had some really, really good music too, so that's another good reason to put it on the list over its successors. Hmm. Number 28 is Rygar.
I remember this game as being the game that was like a sprawling action adventure that you would it was a straightforward side-scrolling action game. You had a kind of a Captain America type shield, but it was like on a chain, mm-hmm. and you would be able to throw it off, hit somebody, and bring it back.
Yeah,
which
the disc armor, I believe it was called.
Yeah, which is very kind of an interesting and unique kind of action to have in an NES game.
Mm-hmm.
And you would go across all these different kind of landscapes, these different areas, and you would collect items, and it had kind of an adventure-y almost, maybe Zelda is too strong of a way to put it, but it had a very adventure-y kind of flair to it. But it was before passwords, before battery save. There was no way to save the game, no way to save the adventure.
Yeah, that was rough.
So I remember it was one of those games where I had to stay up like all night and just not turn the NES off, mm-hmm. make sure no one touches it until you're able to beat the game.
Yeah, pretty crazy. Yeah, I dabbled in that one myself. I never owned it. I played it at like my friend's house before I ever owned an NES. And yeah, the one thing I do really remember strongly about it is that yeah, it was a tough one. And yeah, you did have to leave it on for a long time if you wanted to make substantial progress.
Yeah, I was disappointed when they tried to bring the franchise back during, what was it, the PS2 era? Mm-hmm. And it just kind of fell a little bit flat. And
I actually really like that version. But yeah, and remember there was actually a Wii version of that as well.
I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, none of it made as big of a mark with me as the NES game back in the day.
Yeah, I think the sequel was worthy, but yeah, the original one was certainly the one that people remember fondly. Number 27 is Ghosts and Goblins, the classic from Capcom. You play as Arthur the Knight. You have your lance and other weapons, and you're fighting zombies and basically trying to kill Satan as well.
And it literally is Satan. In the instruction manual, it just said Satan. Yeah. I remember seeing that on a school bus. I was reading the manual, and I couldn't believe that just straight up Satan was the boss of a game. And I believe there was a guy next to me on the bus who couldn't even play the game because you know, his family was religious, and it just said Satan right there in the manual.
It's kind of weird that, you know, Nintendo had, you know, all of these weird rules and regulations back then of, you know, certain content that couldn't be in games. But it was okay to have Satan in that game. And like I was, you know, looking at you know, the Adventures of Bayou Billy the other day, where at the very beginning of the game he goes, "Oh God!" And I'm like, "Wow, I'm kind of surprised Nintendo let that through." But I'm, you know, going off the path. We're talking about Ghosts and Goblins, and it was, and I feel like, you know, everything we've talked about so far, I go, "This was really a hard game." But man, I mean, you if you think Ghosts and Goblins, you gotta think crazy controller breaking challenge, as well as some awesome music.
It's the original troll game, because not only is it ridiculously hard, and even in the later levels, a little bit glitchy. I mean, a lot of the strategies that I developed for getting past some of the tougher stuff, like I think in the next to the last level, there's this one part where you're scrolling vertically, and there's two like kind of long serpent-style dragons mm-hmm. coming after you. And
you just like scroll them off the screen or something.
Yeah, something like that. But then literally you beat the game, and then they say, well, wait a minute, this was all fake or whatever.
Yes, this room is an illusion and a trap devised by Satan. Go back to the beginning and try over.
So if you want credit for having fully beaten the game and you want to see the actual ending, which is probably, I think it was just a screen.
Well, it has an all-time classic, you know, mangled English ending that you get for a reward.
Was it "You have reached happy end"?
It is... congratulations, the story is happy end.
Well, that's pretty worth it. But you got to go all the way back through the game to get that again. And it's
being
so
punishing.
Being
the brave and courageous knight that you are, you feel strength welling in your body, I think.
Wow, nice memory. I mean, even right there on the very first level, like even just a few screens in to scrolling to the right, you run up to the Red Devil.
Oh, God.
Who is just a common enemy, and he is just so unpredictable.
Yeah, this pattern, if you can even call it a pattern, is just crazy.
Yeah.
And the other thing I remember is, like, on that first level, like, there are these weird ghost creatures is, like, you know, in the second half of the level, and they kind of remind me of flying hams, which I thought was hilarious.
But I remember back in the day, it was pretty spooky for an 8-bit NES game, you know, when I was a kid. The graphics had a spooky style, and they didn't have many games back then other than maybe Castlevania that had kind of a horror-y theme mm-hmm. for a while in the NES. So it really stood out to me, and I also really liked the graphics. I think you told me once it didn't quite live up to the arcade.
Well, the problem was that on the back of the package, they showed the arcade game.
Oh, right, right.
And I bought it based on that, along with my brother's convincing, because my brother was like a big horror fan. And so I opened it up, and I was so pissed off that it didn't look anything like what was shown on the box. I'm like, Crapcom, I hate you.
I don't remember if I saw the box or not, but I remember, for whatever reason, loving the graphical style. So that's that game, that franchise actually, and Super Ghouls and Ghosts is probably my favorite on the SNES. Mm. But that franchise is one that I both love so much and hate so much.
Yeah, it's very much a love-hate relationship, because, you know, as frustrating and as infuriating as it is, there's still so much to love about the game, and that's why it's on our list. Next, number 26, Crystalis.
This is one of the games that that had no fanfare, you know, had no previous kind of incarnation. And kind of came out of nowhere to really impress me back in my Game Players days when I was working on Game Players magazine. And I believe I got assigned to it. I'm not sure if I wrote about it or just if that was back when I was just playing games and taking screens for other people or whatever. But it was like an action-adventure game, you know, on a system that, other than the Zelda titles, didn't really have a lot of this types of game. And it was pretty complex, had a pretty, for the NES, pretty thorough story. And I remember also hearing that it became one of the one of the games that people would call up to the Nintendo, tips line to get tips about the most.
Yeah, we were seeing lots of, tips in the counselor's corner of Nintendo Power.
Yeah, and it was purely on NOA's recommendation, based off of all the feedback they got on that game, I think, that caused them to re-release the port/remake for the Game Boy Color years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually haven't really played the NES version that much, but I have played the Game Boy Color one. And, I kind of enjoyed it, but then again, I didn't play the original, so I didn't have a lot to compare it to.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, and my memory of it is a little fuzzy, but I do remember it being one of the best kind of surprise hits on the NES for me.
Mm-hmm. Number 25 on the list is G.I. Joe, Real American Hero. And I was, primarily the one who pushed to put this on the list. Full disclosure, I was a huge G.I. Joe fan back in the day. I'm still a huge G.I. Joe fan now, I guess. But I think the game stands out really well on its own just as a solid action game. It was very unique in its structure. First, you'd have like a pure side-scrolling action level. Then after that, you'd have an adventure stage, a non-linear level where you had to go around and place bombs to blow up the enemy outpost. And then you'd have another side-scrolling level that was capped off by a boss fight. And, moved really smoothly, had a lot of cool exploration elements in the way that there were some, destructible environments and things like that. It was just fun. But also, as a G.I. Joe fan, I really liked the fact that, all the different characters were in there, and they had different stats and different weapons, and, all the bosses, were like straight from the toy line. You could fight Destro and Cobra Commander and Globulus, the giant snake man, of course. You could even get into vehicles. Get into a helicopter or this Buzzbore vehicle that climbed up walls, and it was just a heck of a lot of fun. So, licensed games, of course, have a pretty crap reputation, but this was one that bucked the trend and was really, really fun. I wish I could say the same about the sequel, G.I. Joe the Atlantis Factory, which is published by Capcom. I'm like, oh, wow, now they've got the license? So this is going to be even better than the original? Nope. Not at all. That wasn't the case.
I can't for the life of me figure out why I didn't really play that game back in the day.
It was even a cover story on Game Players.
Yeah, and I was a huge G.I. Joe fan. I know I did play it a little bit. I can't remember what my exposure to it was, but for whatever reason, I don't think I ever really dug into that title. It's too bad that it's a licensed title and maybe it won't show up on Virtual Console ever, or else I'd give it another shot.
Yeah, plus the original publisher, was so totally long defunct.
Yeah.
Taxan.
I did love me some G.I. Joe in the 80s, though.
Moving on, the next on the list is Tetris. And, Tetris, it's Tetris. the classic original falling block puzzle game. More well-known for its Game Boy incarnation, but they came out around the same time. And, it's such an excellent addictive puzzle game. Everyone knows what Tetris is, so I'm not going to harp on it too much. But, it's an all-time classic, so had to be on the list.
Yeah, the Game Boy version was definitely my Tetris, and I barely tried the NES one. But, Tetris is Tetris, and mm-hmm. especially back then, before we had the modern kind of puzzle game genre that Tetris mm-hmm. kind of created, Tetris on anything would have been pretty amazing.
Yeah, I guess I have to give a shout-out to my neighbor, Nick, who, I think he got the game for Christmas, and, I had, maybe seen it in Nintendo Power, but I'm like, this looks like a boring thing. What are these falling blocks? Who the heck cares? My neighbor, Nick, got it, and he was like, oh, I got Tetris. I'm like, oh, whatever, and he brought it over. I'm like, oh, my God, this is so good. I'm totally addicted now.
Yeah. Now, though, I presume you are talking about the Nintendo-published Tetris for NES and not the Tengen Tetris.
Well, they're both really good, but, the Tengen one, was unlicensed, and I did get to play it.
It had two-player, I think.
Yeah, it had two-player co-op mode. And, it's arguable that it's better than the original. So I could see it, being on that list. But, yeah, my intent was to put the Nintendo-published one on.
And most people would have played the Nintendo version because I believe, they got basically through the courts, they got Tengen to stop producing the other version.
Yeah, the Tengen one was super rare. It was, the most valuable Nintendo game for quite some time. 23, Kid Icarus.
I love that game, despite the fact that, if I really am honest about it, it's not the world's best design game, and it is exceptionally hard. But man, it's got a lot of charm. It has a great humor to it, and it is fun platforming, even though it's really challenging. And I remember it was a, you know, along with Metroid, those two games that came out.
The Adventure series.
That were in the silver boxes, the only two silver boxes. And the silver boxes captivated me in that little glass booth at Nintendo, or sorry, at Toys R Us, where they would keep all the games that you'd, you know, we'd pick them up after you paid for them. And I got both of those games home and just love them. And I still love Kid Icarus to this day. Love the fact that we got to play at least two more sequels on Game Boy and on 3DS.
Next up, we have the classic RPG Dragon Warrior, number 22.
Yeah, I really pushed to put this one on the list because it was the first RPG I ever really played. I didn't have a PC. I only had games consoles.
Yeah, I mean, if you were a Nintendo player, this was kind of the one that introduced people to the genre.
Yeah, the
whole.
I didn't
know about that stuff before.
I remember seeing the game mentioned in Nintendo Fun Club, the newsletter that was the precursor to Nintendo Power.
Oh, wow.
That mentioned that it was explaining to you that when you saw a town from the on the world map and it was small, and then you went into it, it got big, and you went inside the town, because it's hard to think of that now, but that was such a new and novel concept when Dragon Warrior came around that you had to explain the fundamentals of console RPGs to people. So that was kind of my experience with it. I mean, I'm sure compared to a lot of the Dragon Warrior sequels that came out on NES, it's an inferior game, and I didn't keep up with the series very much, but that first game,
I would
at least,
probably argue to put Dragon Warrior 4 on here instead, but I didn't really play the NES Dragon Warrior games that much. I mean, I didn't really get into RPGs until later, but so I can understand putting Dragon Warrior 1 on here.
Yeah,
because it was quite a significant game, if nothing else.
Yeah, it was just so fresh at the time. I mean, I'd never played anything like it, and I love the idea that my character grew stronger, over time, that I leveled up, which again was a new concept at the time. So that one left a big imprint in me. And also, it was I found out maybe from you years later that. That my predecessor at Nintendo Power, Mr. Scott Pelland, had a hand in the localization of that game.
Yes, he did. He was the one who came up with the famous phrase, "A slime draws near."
That's pretty awesome.
And of course, speaking of Nintendo Power, we actually gave away, or they gave away, copies of the game when you subscribed to Nintendo Power during this period. I guess it wasn't quite the hit they were hoping for.
Had some left over, maybe.
Yeah, because I remember, just were given copies away when you subscribed. It was that was a huge successful campaign for them. It didn't come with a box, as I recall, if you got it that way. But hey, what's a better freebie than an entire NES game?
Yeah,
and it's certainly a great way to introduce people to the genre. Is see, that's free to play done right. Let me tell you. next up, we have Shadow of the Ninja at number 21. Which I think is an incredibly underrated game. Most people don't really think about that one that much. It's by Natsume. It was one of the first games that they did, maybe the first game that was published under that name. Before they were all known for Harvest Moon, they made some really hardcore action games. Shadow Ninja was fast. It was fluid. You could get different weapons, either a sickle and chain or a sword. You could power them up. You could choose from a male or female playable character, but that was way before its time, man.
Yeah.
And just, a diverse array of stages. You could, climb on, ceilings, hand over hand. Couldn't climb up walls like you could in Ninja Gaiden, but, being able to hang from the ceilings and stuff and drop through the floors, very fun. You had some nice, big, bulky boss modifying. The battle tank was just a lot of fun. And, it obviously, comes second fill to Ninja Gaiden. But, if you need a second great ninja game on the NES, I can't recommend it enough. It's excellent. It is on Virtual Console.
Oh, well, that's awesome, because I was just about to say I've got to go back and try that game again one of these days, because it passed me by back when it was new. And it was only, years and years later, after, I wasn't really playing the NES anymore, that I heard from people that it had been a real kind of, cult favorite, and that, it was something that shouldn't have been missed.
Yeah, definitely, as far as I'm concerned. Number 20, Bionic Commando.
The game where you can't jump, but you can swing on a giant robot arm.
That's right. Yeah, that, it broke the rules. It seems like every game, you had your attack, you had your jump. But in this game, no, it was all about mastering that bionic arm.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, there'd never been anything like swinging on that arm in a game before. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the things that impressed us about a lot of these titles, is back on the NES, we were seeing a lot of this stuff for the first time. Mm-hmm. And, You know, even though you couldn't jump, the fact that you could swing on this arm, it kind of gave you that kind of, I don't know, fun, kind of free-spirited feeling you get as a kid, you know, swinging on an actual rope, you know, on a, over a, you know, a lake or something. I don't know. But there was something just inherently fun about swinging on that arm.
Yep.
And so I loved it. I loved the whole presentation and the weird kind of Super Joe story. Gotta love that the main character's name is Rad Spencer.
Yeah.
It's pretty dope.
And the fact that the final boss is Hitler.
Was it real? I mean, it was Hitler in the Japanese version, right? Did they change it in the U.S.? I can't remember.
I mean, if you saw him, yes, it's totally Hitler. But no, officially, he has a different name in the U.S. But, I mean, it is Hitler.
Right. Rad Spencer versus Hitler with a bionic arm.
But aside from the bionic arm stuff, you know, it also had, you know, just a really cool nonlinear structure. You know, some neat adventure elements of getting different weapons to be able to go through different areas.
You could revisit stages or go to them in different orders.
Had a lot going for it.
Order, yeah.
And I remember it, you know, covered nicely in the early issues of Nintendo Power, so that was a lot of fun. Moving on, number 19, pro wrestling.
A big favorite from both of ours. I may have told this story on the show before, I don't remember, but it was the only game where I got it on... I got it day one, didn't even know it was coming out, saw it, and I loved wrestling at the time, so I had to have it. Brought it home, immediately called one of my best friends who was super into wrestling. He came over, we played it for quite a while, then he was obsessed with it. He had to borrow it that night. So I ended up letting, the first night I owned that game, I ended up letting my friend borrow it, and I was just sitting there thinking, man, this sucks, I should be playing pro wrestling right now.
Yeah, when it came out, I didn't even have an NES, but it was when I was visiting my cousins that I've mentioned before, and we went out and got, they were like, you know, we're like, oh, I've got to get this game, and they earned some extra money working for my grandfather, and so we all went out to the store and picked up Pro Wrestling and introduced me to the game and, you know, to the NES as a whole at that same time. And, yeah, cool game. And, of course, you know, such great characters. You know, it's hard to actually pick a favorite. Ours, of course, I think we've all sided with the Amazon and his head bites. And,
he,
you know,
basically the creature from the Black Lagoon, but in wrestling tights.
But Starman was really cool.
From outer space with a mask.
And, you know, there were other guys that, you know, had, you know, these, you know, nifty special moves. Like, which one had the back brain kick?
That was Fighter Hayabusa, the most kind of standard-looking guy.
Yeah, he was kind of generic-looking, but you got to love the name Back Brain Kick.
Yeah. I love that game, and it was so hard because it really came down to how fast you could push the buttons, which is why I didn't actually beat it all the way through and face Great Puma in my title defense until I got the NES Advantage joystick, which was the first controller with Rapid Fire built in. So I had to cheat a little bit in the end to win, but I still could get pretty far without it.
Well, the cheating way would be to throw guys out of the ring and then knock them down and get them counted out and disqualified.
I did that a lot.
Cheap victory move.
And my favorite move is like body slamming them over the ropes, then running back, bouncing off the other ropes, coming back and doing a splash over the top rope to the outside of the ring. That was amazing.
Yeah, I know we've talked about this before, but I think for both of us, if we could revive any old Nintendo franchise in some way, it would be pro wrestling.
Yeah, because a part of me still loves wrestling just as I loved it as a kid, but I've really fallen out of keeping up with it. And so it's like kind of like with sports titles. I used to love, like I'd never played sports, but I would play any sport as a video game. And I used to that's how I learned the rules to a lot of major sports as a kid. But today it's like sports are so semi and I feel
pro
like
wrestling has no rules. Are you crazy?
Well, and like, but I don't keep up with WWE, so I don't want to see like basically a recreation or interactive simulation of that television show. But if they were to bring back really arcadey style wrestling that wasn't about trying to recreate a specific version of wrestling, but was more broad, I'd be so into that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot they could do with it. I mean, maybe now's not the right time. It's not like, you know, pro wrestling, you know, is at its height of popularity or anything, but they could totally do some. It would be great.
Yeah.
Number 18, Maniac Mansion. Port of the PC title, but changed quite a bit, censored in some ways, but so much fun. You know, you had your seven distinct characters.
It was like a classic PC-style adventure game.
Yeah, it was
right?
a point-and-click game. You had to pick up items, figure out how to use these items. You know, it's all about solving puzzles. You know, there's no combat involved or anything. It wasn't the kind of game I was really into at all on the NES, but it worked really, really well. And especially because of just the quirky sense of humor. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so bizarre. You know, you got you know, these blue bad guys. Their skin is blue for, like, no apparent reason at all. One of them is an obsessed militant who loves his hamster more than anything. The other, you know, the main bad guy is trying to perform a brain swap experiment. And meanwhile, you got these, you know, diverse characters that can use, you know, their various skills. You know, they can type up, you know, some memoirs and that, you know, to solve a puzzle. It's different and it's fun, and I really, really wish it were on Virtual Console.
Couldn't you put that hamster in the microwave?
You could microwave the hamster. you know, I don't know for sure. You know, allegedly, Nintendo found out about this, and they took it out of the game for, like, its second print run. But I think every copy I've ever seen has had it in there, so I'm not sure that print run ever happened.
Hmm.
I've even talked to the PR guy who was, you know, at Jalco at the time, and he tried to, you know, tell me about this. I think he did, but I have totally forgotten. So that's kind of a pointless story on my part.
There you go. World-class anecdotes from two...
Straight from the pros.
Straight from the pros who've been doing this so long, they've forgotten everything.
Number 17, Castlevania.
I loves me some Castlevania. That is one of the handful of NES games I can go back to still every year or two and just pick up and play straight through within, you know, an hour or two, and I still kind of mostly remember everything. And it holds up well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I still curse at every flying Medusa head that hits me.
Oh, those Medusa heads.
And in the next to last level, there's still that one long haul of just frustrating death that actually leads to death when you mm-hmm. fight the Grim Reaper, where you're having to get past knight armor, and it's just so difficult.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I've recognized the patterns, and I just, it's such a smooth playing game. And I love the music. I really love
the music. The music is so, so good.
It's one of my all-time favorite soundtracks. Just random songs from random levels, not even the main themes you'd necessarily think of, pop into my head at all the weirdest times still.
That's true. You start singing these Castlevania tunes randomly on your way to lunch.
Yeah, and you'll say, that's not even like the main theme. That's just some
random
level. I know,
it's like, that's level. From level 5.
Yeah, and I just love the fight at the end with Dracula, and especially, again, like with Ghosts and Goblins, there weren't a lot of darker-themed games back mm-hmm. then. And it's weird to think of those as dark because they're so cartoony.
Yeah.
Today, they're laughably childish. Yeah. But back then, it was like, oh, this is a little bit spooky.
But it was cool the way that, you know, this Japanese take on classic American horror monsters, you know, you got your merman, you got your werewolves, you got Frankenstein's monster, you got Medusa,
hunchbacks.
You have death.
Mm-hmm. That's what I really love about that Mummies. First Castlevania, and actually what I didn't love so much about where the series has gone in more recent years is that
under the crapper.
I like my Simon Belmont in his little bear fur undies with his whip, killing classic kind of Universal style or Universal cinemas, you know, movie monsters. Mm-hmm. When it got super kind of like you know, keyed into that art style, which everyone loves, and I like it in a different way too, with more, I don't know, just weird kind of obscure monsters, I just felt like they're all a bit more forgettable. I really like the roots of Castlevania is my favorite Castlevania.
Well, our next title on the list, Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest.
Guess
what? We like Castlevania.
Personally, I would reverse the order of those two and put the original higher, but despite all the many flaws, and there are quite a few in Castlevania 2, I do still really fondly remember that game.
Yeah, for me, it's just I really like these adventure elements, the nonlinearity, the exploring, and the wacky dialogue that results from some of the game's quirkier features. Like, you know, we're going to lie to you about some hints. And so you get things like, you know, give a silk bag to the graveyard duck as one of these false hints. It's like, what?
I know, but especially back then, and it's hard for me to comprehend in an NES game as a kid that some of these tips are correct and some of these tips are wrong.
That was not maybe the best idea for them to put into this game, but you know, exploring the countryside, having the day-night cycle,
mm-hmm.
You know, things got tougher when it became nighttime. You know, the towns became overrun with zombies, and this whole new twist to it, this exploring the Transylvanian countryside, was a heck of a lot of fun, and you know, maybe they went too far in the difficulty shift, but you know, the original Castlevania, super hard. The sequel, not so much. Actually, Infinite continues, and you could just explore as much as you want. Your only penalty was, you know, losing some experience points and some of the money you acquired. But I really enjoy it. I love getting the different whips and leveling up and finding all these, you know, different sub weapons, not having just, you know, have one at a time. So it's a cool game. It's I really like it.
And you can't mention that game without mentioning the weird, bizarre whirlwind. There's that one spot in the game where you just can't... you literally hit a literal dead end in the game.
Yeah.
And there's no way... And you search and you scratch your head and you think, which could have taken a different path, and you spend countless hours trying to figure out what you do. Then you finally pick up Nintendo Power or call a game counselor, and they say, actually, you know, you just go up to that spot, you squat down for such and such amount of time.
While holding the right, crystal gem, of course.
Right. And then a magic tornado comes and takes you to where you need to go. No way you'd ever guess that on your own. So,
I suppose. But still, I think
I hold a grudge to this day.
I love the game regardless. Well, that's been a whole bunch of stuff. So I think we're going to actually wrap it up for this episode. And we're going to continue with our top 30 list for next week's show. But before we go, I'm going to do a dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of the NES title, Street Fighter 2010, The Final Fight. Conquer a galaxy with your bare hands. 25 years ago, you ruled in the world of the Street Fighter. Since then, you and your partner have created a formula that turns men into supermen. Your partner is dead, the formula has been stolen, and you're out for revenge. You use your serum to transform into the most powerful man in the galaxy. You'll cross the stars in search of the killers that changed your life forever. With your newfound strength and your old Street Fighter training, you can't wait for your final fight. Teleport across the galaxy in this action-adventure game for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Detailed graphics bring you all the excitement of countless worlds.
I still never understood the title of that game, what it had to do with either Street Fighter or Final Fight.
Well, in Japan, it had nothing to do with either, but in the U.S., they decided that was the best way to sell the game.
Well, that explains it.
Did it work? I don't know.
All right, well, that's it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow the Hoff on Twitter, at Chris the Hoff, and I'm at Chris Slate. Hoff also has a cool blog called Still Playing with Power. You definitely need to check that out at christhehoff.tumblr.com. And email us at powerprospod@gmail.com. And as we proved earlier this episode, we do read them from time to time. And also, if you like the podcast, always swing by iTunes and let us know and give us some feedback. We really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Chris Slate.
See ya.
And that vampire-killing crazy man, Simon Belmont.
That is the power of a Belmont.
We will see you next time.